This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
This is Everything Elite, the world's best podcast devoted exclusively to All Elite Wrestling and the Elite Extended Universe, which includes Roads to the Top, folks. Roads to the Top. It's a part of the Extended Universe, I think. Anyway, I'm Aaron, and I'm joined by the world's number one Roads to the Top fan. It's Mike Spears.
Yeah, I am so stoked as my key binding's completely messed up there. I'm going to delete some of the pause for the podcast, but I'm going to leave most of that in there for the true heads. But yeah, no, Road to the Top, it's something the whole family can love. We get to see Brandi Rhodes and Cody Rhodes start their family. We got to see Mama Rhodes in there, and who can see where this is going to go, and it's going to be 30-minute show, and I'm willing to state this now. I said this in the Discord. There will be ongoing coverage of Roads to the Top on the EE Patreon feed. I can't wait. I might try to loop in Mama Spears because her only sense of wrestling cognizance in the modern era is if someone shows up on the Today Show or Total Bellas. Not Total Divas, just Total Bellas.
I respect that. We're also joined, of course, by Nate, a.k.a. Epitasis. And Nate, I got some breaking news for you to respond to.
Oh, I'm ready.
Which we're live for, actually. After the match, Darby Allin says John Silver dislocated his shoulder.
Well, it sure looked like he did in the match. I thought he might have been working that. But he did hobble around and do that thing where you kind of tug at your own arm in a weird way. So that makes sense. I mean, he went over that apron, or not the apron. He went over that security gate barrier. I don't think we have a good name for those.
Barrier.
What are they called? Barrier?
Barricade. No.
Barricade.
Fuck.
Barricade. Yes.
Yeah. What's the stupid word they use in WWE for
dasherboards?
Dasherboards. Yes. He went over the dasherboards at a crazy pace. Because he was working his hardest.
Boards.
Nope. Vito.
A very good dasher board. Took you a second.
Yes.
Yeah, that was not the delay. That was Aaron's brain delay, is what that was.
Yeah, brain bad.
So that makes sense. I mean, he still had a killer match. So, you know, John Silver's the man.
Yes, and Darby did that one, like, not quite a judo throw, but when he, like, whipped him over, you know, with his arm, and I'm just like, dude, you just fucking pulled him over by his arm, like, kind of rude, honestly. Anyway, I guess we just did breaking news instead of our, you know, normal banter up top, so
But breaking news.
Yeah, so I'll just do the plugs up top. Everything AEW is our Twitter account. I'm at Aaron Like the Car. Nate's at Epitasis. Mike's at Fuji Heya. Subscribe to the podcast. You just search Everything Elite on the podcast app of your choice and subscribe. You'll get these as soon as they come out, usually on Thursday mornings these days. Give us a 5-star rating and review if you use the Apple Podcast app. And the best way to support the show is to head over to patreon.com/everythingelite. Subscribe. Thinking of rejuvenating the tiers. I came up with an idea just before we started recording. So I haven't even... cleared it with the boys. Yeah.
Some more breaking news happening on the podcast.
Breaking news.
But yeah, I might do that. Also, our biggest month ever over at the Patreon. We've hit a new subscriber number. So thanks, everybody, for joining us. Really appreciate it. Okay, well, I'm just going to go into it then. So we'll start off the show with Elite or Delete. I don't know. I'm interested to see what you thought, Nate. I always see like, oh, we've got 30... notifications on the Twitter account, but I never click over there because I'm worried that you need to see the replies, you know, and you won't remember to go back and check the replies or something. So well, I try to stay out of there.
I never need to see the replies. Don't. I do. It is very useful sometimes that we have three people theoretically using that account, because then we can just ignore things, be like, oh, nope, never saw it. Sorry, somebody else must have been active on the account at that time.
Yeah, pretty, somebody handy. Somebody came at me for the Irish rant that I did. I don't know when that was.
Yeah, you did bury all Irish people.
Wasn't my intention. I was just trying to bury Irish Americans.
Did that? Did you get some clarity as to why me and Mike reacted like we did?
Yeah, I mean, this one person was really mad about it, and I typed out a response to it, a level-headed response, and I was like, you know what? I'm just going to let this die, and now I'm going to bring it back up on the show.
No, it's fresh news, new business right at the top. it was not the best thing you've said on the show, I guess.
No, probably not.
You might have narrowly avoided being canceled, which, of course, is always our goal.
Well, I mean, I got a lot of support in the Discord, to be fair, so, but yeah. Just want to be clear.
To be clear, he meant he doesn't like Irish Americans, is what he meant.
Yes, I meant people who live in America who have never sniffed Ireland.
Let's just distill it down to what we're talking about. You just like Boston.
I do dislike Boston. Actually, Boston is a cool ass town. I just hate people from Boston, really.
Now, I just cut through that. Irish Spring. Yeah, what's your opinion about Irish Spring?
No, Irish, so it's got to go.
Okay.
Sorry. But anyway, but I love, The Departed. That's cool.
It was fine. Pretty good.
Oh, I like The Departed. I think it's good. What do you think about Ben Affleck refusing to wear a Yankees hat?
That's good. I do like that.
That rules.
Yeah, you have to protect your outside. Brand. Yeah, you have to protect your brand. It's like. Yeah. There's a good bit in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood about the kayfabe of aging actors going and being the, villains in new TV shows and putting over the hot new young baby face. And it's like, then it totally changes how everyone perceives these actors. And it's like, oh, now you're the old villain and the new guy is the new baby face. And that's instructive for Ben Affleck to be like, no, I can't put on a Yankees hat. It's going to ruin my whole thing.
It did lead me, I forget who was tweeting about this, but I was in the replies and it did lead me, this is why I just thought of it, to Jack Nicholson having banned Celtics gear on the set of The Departed.
Because he's a Lakers fan, yes.
Yes, but he's apparently a Lakers and Yankees fan.
Disgusting.
Because he also, I think he refused to wear a Boston hat in the movie.
Yeah.
Aren't you like a Kentucky basketball and Yankees fan?
Yes, I am.
Who's your football team?
I was a Minnesota Vikings fan, but I don't watch football.
Okay. I'll let it slide then.
What this makes me think of, and
I'm from Kentucky. I mean, to be fair. I mean,
a Yankees fan.
I've explained the lore.
I wasn't listening, and it doesn't wash with me anyway.
I played T-ball. My T-ball team was called the Yankees. That's how I became a Yankees fan.
I wasn't asking to hear it again.
I'm going to post the fucking picture, and I'm going to at you in it every time, three times a day.
Well, what that all makes me think about, and I don't know if necessarily, Nate, I'd be stunned if you really see these things up in Chicago, but AB might see a Kentucky Louisville one is the house decided license or house divided license plates you get around here. And you'll get some like really wild combinations. Like I saw one that was the University of Texas on one side and the University of Tennessee on the other. Like
that doesn't even make sense. They're not even rivals.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, so I'm imagining the and there's also the hats that are split down the middle. I think this was something that was on Banner Society a while back, where it was like different college team hats, and like the most nonsensical one was like Northwestern and Texas Tech, like one half Northwestern, one half Texas Tech.
Insane. Now there's a house near me that has like on like it's got the porch, and you got like the two sides of like the. But it's like a small little, it's not really a porch. It's like a step, really. And it's got a Louisville flag on one side and a UK flag on one side. And I find these things very bizarre. I don't understand them.
Yeah.
I don't get it, folks. So, Elite or D-Elite, what I was getting at was weird. I thought it was a weird show. So I'm interested to see what you thought. What was your favorite thing?
I poked my head in the Discord for about a second enough to see somebody said it had a weird vibe. I don't really agree at all. I thought this was a pretty strong show. I think pretty much everything served a purpose and was at minimum clear and effective, and at best, like a pretty strong segment and pretty entertaining. I was like 90% sure going into this that I was going to be picking the Lucha Trios match for my Elite, but I'm not going to, because I did really enjoy the main event, and it kind of snuck up on me. And, you know, that's the expectations games, is sometimes if your expectations are lower and they're exceeded greater, then you enjoy something than you more than you would have otherwise. Obviously, you know, very high on Darby Allin matches generally, but this was not really like your Darby versus Brian Cage matches or your Darby versus Sammy Guevara matches, where it's like a total blow away spot fest, car crash, you know, wild sort of thing. This was a lot of solid traditional match structure by like John Silver. And I really enjoy watching John Silver work in the manner that he did in this match. I really think, like, John Silver, first of all, his offense all looks great. Like, everything always works with him because his fucking kicks look great. His slaps look and sound great. He throws guys around. He chucked Darby Allin across the ring like he was Brian Cage. All look tremendous. And John Silver is kind of in a class of his own as far as, like, projecting physical charisma. Like, he's really, you know, usually he's doing it in, like, a goofy sort of amped up way. Like he's like a Buff Bagwell or like a Chris Candido kind of way. But when he got to the meat of this match, he was like pure focus. JR called out. He was staring at the camera and it didn't feel like put on, oh, I'm intense and I'm trying really hard. It felt like sincere, genuine focus and intensity from John Silver. And you could feel it when he looked at Sting too later.
Yeah.
So I was super high on this. You know, the apparent shoulder dislocation helped the match, if anything, because Silver sold that like $1 million if he was selling. And a couple of very cool counters. Queen Slayer counter, very cool. We haven't seen anybody, I think, counter out of that stunner that Darby does. So, yeah, kicked ass, and I loved it.
Yeah, I think the best way to describe Silver's offense and his overall like physical presentation in the ring, like as you were saying, Nate, is he's very dynamic. And it's something that, given his size, it's something that you would think that a less talented wrestler would just go with tropes. You would think that they would just like go with like the standby of, oh, this guy's like 5'4". He shouldn't be able to do things like this. But no, John Silver is the meat man. It makes total sense idea that he was able to beel throw Darby Allin halfway across the ring doing like that. And then like the dives and basically being like a human bowling ball. Like that makes perfect sense for it. And I don't think that was like one of the few lines that Jim Ross said tonight that I felt like was actually pretty present, was talking about that. The thing that got me about this match, and it was something that my opinion on the show kind of hinged on, this match being pulled off the way it was. And as is always, I had a good time with watching Dynamite tonight, but it's something where the way that they built this match and playing up the traditional structure, Nate, I don't know if this was something that kind of was going off in your head early, but it started to with me. I could have saw this being a time limit draw, like the TV timer remaining time limit draw, because it was getting to a point where I was like, doesn't really have like this like tremendous, like huge, like final stretch coming here. Like, are they going to do a time limit draw, and how interesting that would be for both Silver going forward and then Darby wanting to have all these offenses, and he starts it off a time limit draw of someone, and then it's the whole thing about like, can he have a truly successful defense, and it does the title get held up if it's a time limit draw? So I was kind of fascinated by that as my clock was going to 9:57, 9:58, and of course we had the code red finish instead. But yeah, this was exactly what I was hoping for when we were talking about this AB on the morning show on AEW Light. Like that, this was these were two of the three biggest homegrown male babyfaces in the company, with Orange Cassidy being the third, and they were at a position to put them up top and have a match that was uniquely theirs. And I feel like that is something that, given a lot of things with issues I had on the show, is something that they can kind of put the feather in the cap about. I feel like that's something that showing that confidence and like this sort of thing, and it was rewarded.
Yeah, the cool thing to me is seeing someone get an opportunity like this and just fucking killing it and just completely taking full advantage of it. I loved that Silver didn't get in there and try to do like goofy spots to get himself over in that kind of way, but instead it was just like from minute one, he was just an ass kicker and he just was hell bent on destroying Darby. And I thought that was perfect for him. It established him as not just and he is this like super charismatic, funny guy, but it even especially if you don't really know him, I think it makes your brain like flick a little thing of like, oh, this guy is like for real. This is a serious guy that I should be paying attention to. So thought it was great. Even fucking Jim Ross, you know, just went crazy for John Silver here. A lot of cool spots. It was great. And Excalibur playing up the time limit, knowing obviously that it wasn't going to go to a draw, helped build up the anticipation in the match in a really nice way. As you all said, they haven't done that stunner reversal before. You get the cool shout out to Brody Lee, but then it gets immediately reversed into the code red finish. Yeah, great match. I don't care for Matt Hardy getting involved at the end, but the match was great.
So I was going to put over the show closing angle because they like to do these clusterfuck finishes a lot where everybody comes out and you get into a big brawl or whatever. But I think this was just kind of a good way to advance all these different little plot lines without doing the same thing they do every time. You didn't have Sting come out and enter with Silver. You didn't have Sting with Darby. You didn't have Sting do his Tony Schiavone shtick on this episode. He came out when the Dark Order was seeming like they were getting involved and helping Silver too much. So that was a softer touch on using Sting, which is good to see after they've driven him into the ground on previous shows. And then the Matt Hardy thing, they've set up that feud with the Hardy Family Office. Is that what it's called? I really like that name. I don't know why. That name amuses me. But they've set up that feud with him being pissed off, of course, with Dark Order backing Hangman Page and this stuff. So he's going after them. Bunny wants to get involved in the women's division now, which is good to see. And then you get sort of the added element of Ty Conti coming out to even the odds for the Dark Order. So I thought that was a more effective way to close the show if you're going to do one of these big clusterfuck angles than they've been guilty of doing other times. It just had a little more focus to me, if that makes sense. I'm going to make one proclamation just because in the tradition of Aaron saying that Double or Nothing, the first Double or Nothing was the best American pay-per-view of all time. John Silver in this match was like WWE Daniel Bryan if he were good.
Bold. I like it. I'm not even going to push back on that as someone who's not watched a Daniel Bryan match in several years, but I get what you're going for that. And
yeah.
Yeah, no, totally. I'm trying to think about mine. Like, I'm just going to go with my easy one. I really loved the opener. I liked how much that Omega and Hardy gel, or not Hardy, Omega and Seidel gel together. I felt like that it showed off a lot of just chemistry from guys that I know that they cross paths a little bit in New Japan. They might have been on some they've been on PWG shows together, but they might have been on some like some Dragon Gate DDT cross promotion shows and maybe occasionally Ring of Honor. But I thought that this match really came off as super strong and I really completely enjoyed it, and it was something that I came away with. Like, they gave Seidel like the right amount, and it was clear that he was not going to be a immediate challenger, but he kept up his credibility. And then when Kenny won with proper emphasis, and I thought that for like a 15 minute opener with your world champion, I felt like that was pretty successful.
Yeah, I thought it was a really strong match. It was kind of, I mean, it's maybe a little dishonest to say it's exactly what I thought it would be, because I don't have the knowledge or the ability to like come up with the counters and little nifty things that they do. You know, they had a couple good subversions of the One Winged Angel in here. Matt Seidel did a really cool trip. And that, you know, it's just two guys who obviously know each other's work and know how to work a really good engaging match that goes back and forth. So not to say that I knew exactly everything they would do, but I did know what this would be, because you have two high level pro wrestlers and you know Kenny Omega is going to win. And that's what happened, and it was good.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting to start the show with a Kenny match. Like, I thought that was a cool idea, in that I knew we were going to have an actual championship match later on. So cool to see Kenny there. And, you know, Matt Sydal, another guy. I mean, not in the same spot as John Silver, but another guy like getting a bigger shot and delivering, like doing a Matt Sydal match that worked. And, you know, obviously Kenny must respect him and like did a match that would help Matt Sydal also. So, yeah, I thought everything about this was good. That was the weird thing about the show. Almost all the matches were good. But there was just something, a lot of the promos were bad, but something about the vibes were just off for me.
I think all the promos and vibes were good also. I did to amend my statement. I knew what it would be. We know they like to do this. They like to do a super hot opener that's like 50-50 down the middle with a bunch of big kickouts. And they believe that's the big sort of work rate fest that people bite into. So yeah, it's exactly what we get.
All right, so I guess it's my turn. You guys honestly picked the only two things I thought were good on the show. Well, I'm going to give a shout out to Britt Baker, to the old DMD. I thought she had a nice little promo here, and my favorite part was her shitting on Mick Foley. I think Mick Foley should be shit on as much as possible, but not in a Tony Atlas way, in a the way that Britt Baker handled it here. It's kind of weird to me. Do you guys think when we're like, all right, we have this match, this big match, where Britt, I think, loses but comes out the big star of the match. Like, I think Britt definitely comes out of the match better than Rosa. Rosa feels like, to me, like an also-ran in the match. You have an opportunity to turn that into more of a face turn for Britt, but it seems too soon for that. But then you got the crowd chanting DMD with her at the end. It just feels like I'm not sure exactly what they should do with Britt right now. I'm not sure that they're sure either. They've done this weird thing with like the tournament and she didn't win that. And now she's in this Rosa thing. So I'm interested. I'm curious about the Britt Baker character.
Yeah. I think like the analog here is WrestleMania 13, Austin Hart, where that kind of was the start of Austin's big face turn, even though he still wasn't like a clear-cut face really for like another 9 months. And I think that it's something that to build on. It's something that they've been starving to get Britt into a position that the crowd has been receptive towards her. And, but yeah, it is something where Rosa does kind of feel like the afterthought afterwards, but it's something where I would keep the groundswell going for Britt. She seriously has now, I would say, worked through her issues that she's had as a babyface. And then down the line, like the crowd, I mean, it's the same thing like the Bucks. The Bucks are heels that people choose to cheer. Let's see how many people will cheer for Britt Baker. And then before pulling the trigger there, because I think it'd be really interesting. And that could be like the big moment really for her is eventually when she turns face. But, you know, it's a good start. I feel like this is like everything they've done for like the last year paid off with how things have been going for the last week for Britt Baker.
Yeah, I don't think you really need to do a big face turn like until the crowd has already cemented it almost. I think in the last like generation, two generations, I don't know, three generations of American wrestling, the biggest baby faces get there after really hot heel runs, right? So I think you want to get back to when you're touring, get back to when you have fans, get back to when basically the crowd has just turned her on their own. And then you can do a little, you know, demonstrative actual turn to cement her as a babyface. And I think that is exactly what you need to elevate her to the top. And then at that point, you know, have her beat Jade Cargill to get the world title or something. The Thunder Rosa, I was glad they put in the clip of her from backstage after the match last week, because that was a really good promo, just very, you know, her true feelings, you know, very emotional about the match. That was a great addition to the show. And yeah, she is, as the winner, was kind of sidelined here, but, you know, also is theoretically signed to NWA and not to this promotion. So it's like, okay, it's kind of fine to put the focus on your homegrown, you know, future top woman in the company. So that all works for me. Yeah, love Britt.
Yeah, it's one of the few times where I'm not wondering who the next women's challenger is going to be because they don't do anything. And so it could just be anybody. But it's like, oh, there's actually a lot of different interesting ways that can go in the women's division at this point. So I'm actually intrigued about where we're going next with several of these people.
Well, they cleared the deck. Like, that was the nice thing about the Eliminator Tournament, is that they cleared the deck in such a way that if they want to revisit past matchups that Sheeta had, you're totally able to. Like, the deck's been cleared in a way, and there's enough people in this that, like, you could see... You can make an argument basically for everyone with the exception of Nyla Rose because of her having multiple now challenges against Hikaru Shida and Ryu Mizunami as a possible future challenger for Hikaru Shida, and I would buy that argument.
In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card, but with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy Slab Packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club slab pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show, and there's a random innocuous brown bag of cards, and yeah, you can open it, and look, it's going to be junk. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're probably going to get in those. Maybe you find that fun, and sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs, and it ends up being, you know, almost nothing, you know, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You get a display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading. So you know that when you're opening up the slab pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great slab packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club slab packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, setting these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, I've got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. You can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet, arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. Keyless entry, no more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio. And then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. you have your recordings locally, and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They are on standby for you 24/7, so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy video lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived, and really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys and reach in my pocket, or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy video lock. I touch it. 0.3-second fingerprint recognition. 1 second, door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
Yeah, I'll take that into my elite/delete. I think you're exactly right. That Nyla Rose is maybe the one person that they can't have challenge for the women's title next, just because, you know, they did do that, run that back multiple times with her and Shida, which is why I think having Ty beat her was good, because they've had a couple of, you know, strong matches previously. She was an obstacle that Ty couldn't overcome, even though, you know, Ty's obviously been building momentum elsewhere in the promotion. So having Ty beat her is like, okay, now we can see that we're going to put Ty at a new level now. And now Ty is in the, you know, running to be a potential cheated challenger down the line. I'll call the actual match my delete. I thought it was pretty fine. But based on their prior matches, it just didn't live up to that level for me. I don't know. It seemed like maybe toward the end of it, they got a little out of sorts or gassed or something, and just weren't exactly hitting on all cylinders. So that was like maybe the singular thing that was kind of a disappointment, just in terms of my expectations, again, because those two have had, I think, really strong matches every other time they've been in the ring.
Yeah, it's something where with Ty being somewhat ascendant, and she's been all over both Elevation and Dark for the last few months, and kind of just looking good and has been built up, and the DD Ty, like, I'll say this, Nyla Rose had a fantastic sell of the DD Ty going to the finish, but Nyla, it seems to be something that, like, Nyla will be like off TV for like several months, and then like she'll be brought back onto TV, and the first few matches are kind of shaky in a way, because I remember this happening before, and I know that she was, of course, a part of the Eliminator tournament, and she's probably popped up and done like a 2-minute squash match on Darker Elevation over the last 2 weeks. But it does feel like that she's someone that needs to like be in a rhythm, because it does feel like that there was a point in the match where I was like, oh, this is about to go off the rails, but then they brought it back in with the awesome finish. But it's something that, like, match wise on the show, it was the one that kind of underwhelmed my expectations. So I totally understand you going with that, Nate.
Yeah, I mean, I have to agree. I feel like now, I mean, she just had a really good match with Mizunami, so I hate to bury Nyla too much, but it does feel like there have been some big matches where she's gotten gassed or hasn't delivered in some way. But then on the other hand, I can think of three or four counterexamples of her having really good matches in big matches. So I guess she's just inconsistent, perhaps, is the answer.
Yeah, we also, you know, we don't know all the circumstances of their taping schedules and stuff like that. So, yeah, I'm not going to change my opinion on Nyla. I think Nyla is a really good talent and has turned in a bunch of really high level matches. But yeah, for, you know, this one just didn't live up to the standards set by their previous ones.
Now, Ty, for her part, also, you know, it's just hard to, as someone who isn't a wrestler, you know, it's hard to meet out like who's at fault for what at certain times. But Ty didn't seem where she usually is. Now, her in-ring charisma, I think, was all there, as it normally is. But yeah, as Mike said, they're getting behind her. I think she's number one in the fake rankings this week. So they clearly, you know, want her to be, and she's 8-2. So they clearly, you know, have been working on getting her a good looking record so they can feature her. So it's full steam ahead with Ty, I think, which is good.
And they did. They also said, yeah, she's number one in the rankings, but that's her best individual single win so far. So that's like really putting a cherry on top. Like Drew's saying in the chat, they also had the bunny angle there. So she's in the mix. So that's good, too, because You know, I've been wondering on this podcast, why isn't Alia wrestling? So good to see that they're getting her back in the swing of it.
And a good little program to get Ty like a feud and get a win at the end of it without just like a cold match. You actually have something you can build up and get Ty a win, which I think is good for her development as a character. We jumped into that, but I do want to jump back quickly to our listener Elite of the Week. Tharo says the trios match, and I assume he's not talking about the pinnacle match, is exactly the sort of match they should be doing every week. Great news, Tharos. They're doing a very similar match next week. So, I mean, I agree, but it seems like they do too.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we'll see how it is when you inject, the Impact doc into the match and see how it goes with that.
It'll probably be great, like all the other trios matches that he's had this promotion.
That's fair.
He gets in there opposite Phoenix or whatever, and he's like, oh, I gotta do a million fucking bumps for this young guy. I can't believe it. But then he goes out and he does it.
Yeah.
Like the good working brother he is.
Yeah. So my delete is Weird Vibes episode. Shouts to Patrick Cosmos for coining that. Weird Vibes. The weirdest vibe that I had in a promo in a long time was this Christian Cage promo that happened. Like it was something that like took me aback to like a second. And I'm like, do they really actually have a plan for what they're doing with Christian Cage after they built this up and brought him in? Like, this is like a record. Like, he hasn't even had a match, and now he is completely like hanging out with the babyface foils that got fed to Pinnacle, and then Kazarian interrupts and just goes, why aren't you wrestling yet? And Dasha all the while is just kind of like, well, we'll see what happens next week. And then Christian's like, yeah, next week. And it just was awful, just was bizarre, and just like wrapping my head around, like, it was like an in media res promo like that started where like he was giving them like a pep talk, and it led to Kazarian interjecting. Just bizarre energy in this, and just like there was a lot of promos that I could cut down on the show, but this was like the one that I was just like, what are we even doing here? And how have you immediately devalued Christian Cage this quickly?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't really see that. I think maybe it was a little stilted and wasn't supernatural feeling, but I entirely get what they were going to. I think the vibes were mostly fine. You know, they have him in there with the young guys because they're trying to, you know, deflect criticism that they're just bringing in all these legends or whatever. So they explicitly say, hey, Christian Cage is here and he's talking to the young guys and going to give them some hints about tag team wrestling. So they're, you know, trying to make him seem like a good guy in that element of his character. And then I think Cubs said it on Twitter that they were doing a lot of course correction here. And it's like, yeah, Christian Cage came out, grabbed the world title and wants a match with Kenny Omega. But first he's going to put in the work, and Kaz makes the challenge here. They set up a pretty clear angle. It fits in perfectly with what Kaz has been doing, because he's been, you know, whining about being undervalued or underutilized or whatever it is. So I thought those parts fit together pretty well, and they're probably going to go and have a pretty solid to maybe very good match on TV next week. So I thought this was totally functional and fine.
I agree that it was a good idea, but very poorly executed. I mean, it all makes sense what they're doing, but it's just, I would have reshot it. It was bad.
Stilted at the very least.
I didn't like it at all. But yeah, I'm glad to see Kaz point out that, you know, the outwork guy hasn't worked at all. That was fun. I appreciated that. And yeah, they'll have a fine match. As somebody pointed out in the Discord, this is like what Kaz does. He's like put over all the top guys. And so
I pointed that out in the DM, but I don't know if you're referring to what I said. He did it with Moxley, did it with Jericho, did it with Hangman. The only time he shows up to do singles matches is when it's like, oh, we need a good mechanic who can be, you know, credible against our very top guys. And that's what he's there for. So I imagine that's exactly why he's in this spot.
All right, my turn. I'm going to take the easy one. I was planning to come on the show and have a take about how, you know what? The Ethan Page thing is fine because Cody's guys don't get very long leashes on Dynamite. Like, Sean Spears comes in and they really didn't do much with him. You know, we didn't really have to worry about him for very long. But then they brought me this big QT Marshall angle where he cut another bad promo Not as bad as his first one. Literally, though, you could see his hands shaking at one point, cutting the promo, which I thought was funny. But it was bad. I don't have any interest in the story. Cody came out and started to save it, but then he went off on this weird tangent. Yeah, it was just, I don't have any interest in this whatsoever. Don't want to see it.
Don't think it was a tangent. I think it's pretty crucial to the story that they're trying to do. I don't know. I didn't hate it. It was maybe a little long, but I think that's kind of just what you have to deal with when you're dealing with a Cody angle. And this is obviously going to be a Cody angle. You know, I never watched this promo because I don't believe in old wrestling. But everybody on Twitter says they're just taking the exact playbook from Bruno Sammartino versus Larry Zbysko down to it being an exhibition match and, you know, Cody not wanting to hurt his friend. So, you know, I think that's kind of cute just to repurpose those old angles because, you know, people like me have never seen them. So that works. I don't know. QT is much, I would much rather see QT in this spot than Ego or Sean Spears. Just because he's fresh. We haven't seen him more than is necessary in a lifetime like we have with those other two guys. And he has like pretty good, he has a confident heel persona on the Sammy Guevara vlogs. And I don't really fault him for maybe not being ready to take that to national cable television because he hasn't done them before. So, you know, I'll give him a few weeks of leeway to see if he can bring that to a head on the program. And I also, having Cody come out with the headset and everything kind of just gave it a different energy than every other interview angle they do, because they do this all the time with Tony on the ramp. But yeah, I'm willing to see where it goes. Maybe, you know, like I always say with this promotion, you know, trim it by 3 minutes and it's going to be better.
It's something that this, like the setup to this match, and like they have really on Elevation and Dark hammered home the idea that QT Marshall is not happy with the Nightmare family, but the Nightmare family has been like, everything is happy, everything is okay, we're not going to talk about it. And then you finally have this here, and it does have like the old wrestling vibes of Sammartino versus Zbysko there, and that is kind of interesting. It's just as something that I guess he's not a promo guy, because like QT did not come off well in this promo, whereas I think he's great in all the other shoulder content. It's just maybe he's like anxious about this and it kind of came off that way. But it's a facet and it's a storyline that, I mean, it gives Cody something to do. And I think that this is probably going to be a big season finale thing between him and QT for Roads to the Top. Like, now I have to look at nearly everything Cody does with the guise of, is this book for a reality show or not? And for someone like me, I love it. I like having those mental games, but for like the average viewer who is not just like a sicko like I am, you might come away with this with a different response. So I completely understand how Aaron was negative on this promo, and, you know, negative on a lot of, when we get into the full recap, a lot of promos on the show really needed the 3 minute warning happening.
Biggest babyface in the company to me will be whoever finally breaks Cody's fucking arm and sends him home for 2 months or whatever. I need a break from Cody.
We've had breaks from Cody, and I
need another one.
I feel like we've had one pretty recently.
Yeah, the Go Big Show break.
They never really take.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, do another one, and maybe this time, you know. All right, listener delete. Another one I know Nate's not going to be happy with, because he already wasn't happy about it.
I'm already mad about it.
It comes from Patrick Cosmos. He says, delete this workshoot clown trash. Kenny talking New York and the hard cam. QT talking about taking meaningless bumps. Get the fuck out.
There's nothing workshoot about signing with New York. That's just, that exists in wrestling and in real life. The best wrestling is when you pretend as though it exists in the real world. You know, I think there's a very distinct difference between referencing the other major promotion that everyone's aware of and, like, you know, talking about whatever backstage, you know, where's your scissors kind of work shoot bullshit. You know, obviously I'm taking the most extreme example on the other end.
But it's canon,
right? What was the other? Yeah, I mean, New York is, WWE is New York in kayfabe. There's nothing worksheet about that. What was the other line here that I wanted to complain about?
But just like that
meaningless
aspect. Meaningless bumps was the other thing here. But like the whole New York thing, I mean, with as much as they promote it, the Young Bucks killing the business, an autobiography from the backyards to the big arenas, talks a lot about this. So if we are accepting that all of this media is canon, as we do cover everything in the Elite Extended Universe, then this isn't a worksheet promo. This is just fact.
Yeah, the meaningless bumps thing, that is definitely more of a gray area. Like, bumps is a inside term that doesn't really need to be part of the actual text of the program. That's like when on the show the other week, Tony's like, he went back through the face tunnel. He came out of the heel tunnel and went through the face tunnel. Like, Tony, no, that's, you're not supposed to call that out. That's supposed to be subtle and in the background. On the point of the hard cam, though, the hard cam was the other thing. Hard cam is not necessarily an inside term. Like, people, that's a production term that exists in a real sport as well. But what I will delete on the hard cam is they have to fix shooting Wardlow's kick-ass finisher because they keep missing his cool bump, and they really fucked it up on this one because he didn't like the rear turnbuckle, and they messed it all together. So there's a bonus delete.
I agree with you, Patrick. Everything you said, I think it's all right. You know what else is all right?
I'm going to spill your beer again, Patrick.
Well, don't spill his beer on his winning betting slip. I got no good one to go into this one. But good news anyway, because March is here, folks. March is almost over, but it's here. The madness has begun. Time for you to shoot your shot. Score big on the nonstop action with my bookie. We're in the Sweet 16 now, I've been led to believe, although I think it's fake. But you can bet on those over at MyBookie. Hopefully you entered in to the bracket contest where they're giving out $10,000 in cash prizes. Also, they got game props, player props on every game. Your team is probably already out of the tournament, so go bet on some fun props. All you got to do is go to mybookie.ag, use the promo code ELITE. You can get a deposit bonus up to $1,000, and make sure you use our promo code so that MyBookie knows you came from us. So use the promo code ELITE to get that first deposit. Of course, if you're not into college basketball, NBA is going on, NHL. I heard some people betting on the WWE pay-per-view that I think just happened. So there's plenty of stuff to bet on. Just use the promo code ELITE at mybookie.ag.
I encountered mybookie.ag in the real world. No, that's a lie. I lied. I encountered mybookie.ag on another podcast, the Flagrant Ones Patreon, where they have the it's a basketball podcast by the guys who do Hollywood Handbook. They have Carl Tart on there, and Carl Tart has apparently been doing all sorts of big parlays on mybookie.ag, where he bets like $1 or $5 or $10 on like 10 team parlays.
That's insane.
And has won thousands of dollars doing this. He's like, oh yeah, he's doing $5 bets a day, and multiple times has come away with more than four figures. So I was like, oh shit, that's us, we know them.
That's our friends at mybookie.ag.
Yeah. I'm 1 degree from Carl now.
Yeah, our friends there, Aaron, of course. For us, since we don't believe in the NCAA tournament this year because our teams aren't in it, we do have a big event happening this weekend, of course.
F1's back, baby.
That's right. F1 in Bahrain. And I had it pulled up there. And you're looking at like what's happening there. This is the time to get on your driver championship thing, because the odds on Lewis Hamilton will never be better than right now. Because
that's probably true.
I don't believe in anything that they are saying about the Mercedes in this. All right, so I got the Bahrain GP to win. Who are you feeling this week, Aaron?
Well, shit, I'm looking at these odds. You can get Lewis for plus 150.
I'm telling you, this is the best time to vote. Well, we should be saying Sir Lewis. I mean, he is knighted.
Sure,
he's
been
point.
Knighted now.
Yeah,
famous Blackpink fan, Lewis.
That's true. Also a big Blackpink fan. Yeah, I mean, obviously that's really great money on Lewis. But you know, our Bahrain, they didn't go to Bahrain first last time, did they? That was the late race where George was in the car.
Let's not talk about that race, which luckily was not
supposed to say that in the promotion for the betting company, Aaron.
Well, we're out of that. Well, we're out of that. We're just bullshit.
Now we're just talking.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Drive to Survive did not have a lot of Williams this year, which kind of surprised me with George.
Well, I've got two episodes left, so no, don't spoil me now.
How am I going to spoil you on a show about a sports season that you watch in real time?
Because they show background stuff that I didn't get to see.
All right, here's a big surprise. There's a bad wreck on episode 10.
Well, I haven't made it there yet, but I know that already. But there could be stuff I don't know. Oh. For example, episode I just watched about McLaren, and there's a whole thing about like, which I think a lot of this stuff is totally worked. A work.
Yeah.
But it's like, oh.
Reality show worked?
Lando is beating you in the corners, and we got to like change, or, you know, we got to work on your braking strategy. I was like, ooh, this is spicy.
The McLaren storyline as
total work.
Yeah, like Lando and Checo are like, it just did not make sense to me. Like,
no, that's not really how the season went. Anyway,
here's a selection of Lewis Hamilton's follows in order.
Okay.
Odell Beckham Jr., sure. Elon Musk, whatever. Ty Dolla $ign, Andy Murray, British Premier Motorsport Series, British Touring Car Championship. And then the one that really amused me, Hans Zimmer, the composer. Do you think he's like, oh, I gotta find the guy that did that Dark Knight theme with the fucking Joker?
Sir Lewis is a varied individual. He is a true Renaissance man today. He might have an appreciation for film overtures. You know, would not surprise me.
That's sure, but you know, kind of a normie film composer, Lewis. You know,
not
expand
even going,
your horizons a little bit.
Not even following Philip Glass.
Yeah, come on.
Lewis
he has an account.
Lewis makes like $40 million a year, so I'm assuming he's
only. I think he makes close to like 75. With all
he makes at least 40. I feel. Yeah. I'm looking at the drivers.
He's a tennis fan, though. He follows a lot of tennis players, so he's definitely some solidarity with the other underappreciated sports, I guess.
No. Sergio Perez is not on the board. I was going to say that's going to be your best odds, but he's not even on the board.
For Bahrain or for the
for the championship, just not on the board. Very weird.
Yeah,
George Russell has the fifth best odds. Very bizarre.
I wonder if that's one of the things where there's been a lot of action on him. Perez is not on here. Like, who is on here who should not be? Give me one second. Okay.
follows Ben Stiller. I've really been thinking about Ben Stiller a lot lately.
You are my favorite motherfucker. There's only 18 people on here, so they're missing two people, but I don't know who they are.
Anyway,
this is not an F1 podcast. I would love for it to be, but unfortunately it's not.
Yuki Tsunoda is the other person not on there as well.
Very strange. Okay, so let's talk about the stuff we haven't talked about yet. Of course, it kicked off with Kenny Omega beating Matt Sydal with the One Winged Angel. Then we saw Alex Marvez with the Dark Order, Hangman hanging out in the back. John Silver flexing to show that he's ready for the match, and they do this bit where he's getting out of the way of coffin drops. This was very funny. Paige says, don't be nervous because those guys are going to be proud of you either way. Very sweet moment between them. Here's something that hasn't come up yet. Adam Page versus Cesar Bononi. Adam Page wins with the Buckshot Lariat, a very controversial and divisive match in the Discord.
Bononi is not good. I'm just going to say it. He is not good, and I know that there's the Bone Zone out there that are going to go against me on this, but
the Bone Zone.
He's just not a very good wrestler.
So they're doing a unit of Cesar Bononi, Hot Young Briley,
yes,
and JD Drake
and Peter Avalon. I mean, he's leading
Avalon,
this group,
right? He's been allied with HYB and Bononi, of course, but wasn't on this episode in particular. And I halfway, this is like, you know, not grounded in reality, but I do halfway wonder, like, did Tony specifically put together a guy that he knows we like JD Drake with a guy that we know, or he knows we don't like Hot Young Briley, just to see how that. I think the theme should be like, it's an evolutionary chart, but you start off really tall and thin and bad at wrestling, and then you get a little shorter and heavier and you're okay at wrestling, and then you get even shorter and larger and you're really good at wrestling. That should be the team theme.
I can't argue with that. I don't know. I thought this was fine. It was a decent little squash match. It didn't bother me in any way.
I didn't really watch it. It was an Adam Page squash that wasn't 12 minutes. So we had that going for us, which I fear for what a 12-minute Cesar Bononi match would be.
Lance Archer got a pre-tape. He says, Sting, I looked up to you. Without Sting, there is no Lance Archer. He's got the bats there. He says, this bat meant something back in the day. Bet people had to pay attention to you, but now they should pay attention to me instead of you.
Yeah. Like I said previously, Lance Archer, good at presence and delivery on promos. The content of his promos is not always super intriguing to me, but he always delivers them effectively.
I thought that this was probably one of the better stuff here. And as Nate said, yeah, he's effective at this. So it's interesting that this is the route that they're going, it seems like, for Archer and Sting.
Yeah, it's just that like three promos in, I still don't really understand the deal between what Lance Archer's mad about.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the problem in general with Lance Archer being paired with Jake Roberts, because Jake talks and doesn't say anything. So, you know, I guess they interrupted him twice because they were mad that an old guy was taking his time. I guess that's what Lance is mad about. But yeah, that's kind of, maybe that's what Lance and Jake agree on, is they like to say things in a cool manner, but not really say anything of meaning.
It was frustrating here because I thought he was like kind of getting there. I mean, I understand you're exactly right. The point he's making is like, they're putting this old fuck who isn't anything anymore, even if he used to be, on TV instead of me. And he's a babyface, kind of, so he's trying to thread that needle of like, I respect you, but your time has passed. But he just really didn't get to the point on that.
Yeah, just kind of needed to bring it home simply at the end of these promos, I think. Yeah,
yeah, and it's a pre-tape. I mean, just tell him what to say.
Well, you know, the thing about this promotion is they do let guys do their own shit to you know, success or otherwise. But you know, this was still, I think, a pretty good segment overall.
Just dropped $10 on Lewis to win the race this weekend. We got a video recapping Britt and Rosa, as Nate pointed out earlier, kind of giving Rosa a little more shine than perhaps she's gotten in the media. And then Tony's with Britt Baker and cut the promo that we also already talked about, which was very good. And then we had the Christian segment where he's with Griff Garrison and Brian Pillman Jr. and Dante Martin, says he was giving them a little bit of tag team advice, and they did the thing with Kaz. Then FTR and Sean Spears versus the Varsity Blondes and Dante Martin. Spears pinned Dante, which I was a little surprised by, with the Death Valley Driver.
This was fun.
The highlight of this to me was, I think this all happened during the break, maybe I'm wrong, but Dante Martin did a very cool 2-on-1 comeback at the very end of the match, right before he got cut off coming out of the ad break. But you could feel the crowd like, oh, wow, this guy's doing it. This guy's doing some cool shit. He's keeps flipping out of stuff. He has a remarkable ability to rotate his body despite not being like especially small. So that's what stuck out to me from the match. And then, of course, also the everybody going to dive on the pinnacle, but Wardlow stepping in front of them and the entire team being like, oh, we don't want to fuck with Wardlow. So that, you know, just confirms Wardlow is going to be the star of this stable. I think that's good. And, you know, Sean Spears is the fourth guy in a stable to get Wardlow over is kind of fine with me.
Yeah, I thought that this match altogether was exactly what I was expecting and hoping for. I think that Dante Martin, who they like to bring up, which makes me feel very old, 20 years old, and has really like shown unlimited potential here, was solid in this. And this was really like, there were six people in this match, but this match was about Wardlow. Like, let's be honest here. He came out, he has another button undone. He's wearing fun shirts now. He's fun low now. And then when they did the post-match angle, was him.
I'm vetoing fun low.
Fun low is, I've been using fun low for like the last like hour and a half. You've lost your opportunity to veto this. It's already a thing.
It's vetoed and I'm deleting it all from all the Discord logs.
Well, it's too late here, but the fact that like Wardlow did the Mr. Mayhem knee drop to people after the match, and then they made sure that even though everyone else who was a talker got their time in the Pinnacle post-match promo, Wardlow was always on screen. So I never have to ask myself, I wonder what Wardlow's up to, because they make sure we see Wardlow, and that's important to me.
Yeah, Wardlow outshone most of the people talking just by standing there and looking at Tony Schiavone.
Yeah, they did the post-match here with a Wardlow attack. And then Tony was in the ring with the Pinnacle. This, some of the most WCW vibes we've had in a while, of just like seven guys milling about as Tony Schiavone talks to them one by one.
That's a strong endorsement from the Pinnacle from you.
No, it was not.
WCW is good.
That's true. Dash says the Pinnacle is his family. He doesn't have a wife and kids. He just has these guys, which was like a very sad moment, I thought.
He's got nothing to lose. It's all in on the Pinnacle for him.
That's true. Did you guys know this euphemism that Dax used here? This you don't have any salt in your body?
If anybody does, it's got to be Mike.
Mike?
I think... Is that a biblical allegory or something? Because, like, I know that, like, when he said that, I was like, I've heard that somewhere, but not that exact line.
Okay, who turned into a pillar of salt when they turned around in the Bible?
Oh, yeah. I should know this. I feel like
is that when the walls of Jericho came down? Or no, it's when they turned and looked at Sodom and Gomorrah.
Yeah, Lot's wife was transformed.
Because they were going away from Sodom and Gomorrah, right? And they weren't supposed to look back, yes. I believe. I have a religious studies minor. I should know these things.
Yeah.
I went to church for a long time. I should know these things. Okay, I mean, MJF.
You don't learn anything in church.
That's true. MJF said Jericho's fat and won't come out because he's scared.
Yeah, they're kind of baby-facing MJF with these promos that they cut in the Inner Circle about them just being old goofs and doing bad SNL shtick. It's kind of like, yeah, that's right. And you're just yelling it and that it totally works. So I'm buying on Pinnacle right now.
The problem with MJF for me is like when he tries to do the tough guy shtick with like Tony or whatever, it's like this worked with Ric Flair because it felt like Ric Flair could kick your ass. But MJF has none of that going for him whatsoever. Mm-hmm. So I just don't see how he can like, he can be, yes, the chicken shit guy, but he can never be like the kind of leader of a group that Ric Flair was, which is what he's playing here.
Okay. Right now, MJF would kick my ass, but I would kick Ric Flair's ass.
Okay. Yeah, of course. Yeah. But I'm not in this promotion. He doesn't have
He's got really big arms. He had a really hard hitting match with Jon Moxley. I can't do that. I don't know. I'm buying on MJF this week.
I'm selling as always. Taz is there with Team Taz, and he wants you to know that Bullet Club. I'm sorry, Team Taz is fine. Says Cage apologized last week. Cage seems not so sure about apologizing.
I almost said the Bullet Club is fine reference for the Nightmare Family earlier, but you know, but they like to do these things in pairs.
Yes, they do. They did the Tony QT thing. The only thing we haven't mentioned yet is QT's wife made an appearance. You know, he says he's frustrated, but at least his wife is hot. Except he doesn't get to have sex with her because he has to do work for Cody instead.
But nice to see that she's forgiven him for cheating on her with the Bunny Alley for weeks on end.
Or at the very least gave her their credit cards, I would assume. I mean, even if it was not a physical affair, it was at least a financial and emotional one. So
This was a real V-agent situation. Like hardcore. Now they have to pull in that QT somehow stiffed Ethan Page.
QT saw Allie the Bunny. He's like, oh, finally a Jezebel type character. I can really use this in this promotion.
All right. The Lucha Brothers and Laredo Kid against the Young Bucks and Brandon Cutler. Laredo pinned Brandon Cutler. And after the match, Omega attacked Laredo. And then he said he's was remembering the first ever Fyter Fest because, you know, Laredo's there. All the players are here. And then he talks about how he's recalling when they all had a choice 3 years ago. Was he going to go to New Japan? Was he going to go to WWE? No, he didn't even choose AEW. He chose the Young Bucks and the vision they created. So he's giving them one last chance to join him, to do the infamous hand sign. But they don't. They leave. Omega turns around, eats super kicks from the Lucha Brothers. The Good Brothers come in a little late. So I guess maybe the Kenny Young Bucks thing is over.
Well, yeah, until, you know, 6 weeks from now. They just now revived on BTE, the Bucks wanting to be friends with Hangman Page again, and did the clumsiest, most unnecessary retcon. That now was Matt Hardy that sent the text from Hangman's phone to the Young Bucks that made them think that Hangman didn't like him. Just stupid and unnecessary. And, you know, I expect better from the Young Bucks and their storyline plotting here. But I did think this was pretty good. The match obviously was very strong. It wasn't like super high speed like you might expect from this six-person arrangement. But all the spots were pretty great. You know, the Luchadors' charisma was all on 11. And, yeah, I thought the post-match stuff, like, Kenny pulls off what could have been a tough needle to thread, considering they've done this same sort of "are you with me or against me" thing four or five times. I don't know. I wanted Kenny. They never referenced the fact that Kenny's the AAA mega champion, even though he specifically has a part in his entrance where they list all of his accolades. And then he comes out here and he's like, "I remember you from Fighter Fest." And it's like, Kenny, we all fucking saw you wrestle this guy in AAA for the mega championship like 3 months ago. Like, it's right there. I don't know. I mean, I assume it's not a directive from the promotion. Like, don't mention our partners at AAA. So I guess Kenny's just not, trying to do it.
It could be a directive not to mention them because of the current lawsuit AAA has about their international properties outside of Mexico.
Yeah, I don't see how that would apply to referencing a title.
All I'm saying is that people are, the way that AAA has acted towards the rest of the world as soon as this lawsuit came out, they could have said, "Hey, can you just like kind of on the AAA talk with that?" I mean, they took down like all their YouTube stuff.
He did mention AAA because he did. "I know you from AAA." He did say that. So that seems unlikely to me.
I'm just trying to thread the needle there. But yeah, no, I thought this all came across great. I thought that the double stomp package pile driver that I guess like Kenny must have bit his lip and was bleeding at the bottom of it looked really sick during this, and I think that this was pretty effective. And now I guess we are replaying, is there melodrama in the Bullet Club once again?
I thought the interesting thing was, I'm sure I'm forgetting something, but Kenny for the first time like did the asshole thing in front of the Bucks. Like, before it could have been like the Good Brothers were doing this, Don Callis is doing this, but here he was actually beating up Laredo Kid and then saying like, "You have to join me in this." So it did at least make sense as a capital S story, capital B beat.
A new threshold that they were being asked.
Indeed. I like that. Jade Cargill gets a pre-tape. She says Red Velvet made the biggest mistake in her career, getting in her face. She beat her ass. Now you're coming back asking for more. Jade says she's on the path to greatness and you're just a pit stop. She's also getting excited for the F1 kickoff this weekend. She says, "We're both undefeated in singles matches, but there can only be one. I look like money. I sound like money. I look good looking like money and sounding like money. And I'm that bitch."
Folks, where's the lie? This fucking got me hyped. The music builds throughout this whole pre-tape in a way that I was like, "Oh yeah, here we go. I'm getting fired up for this." Still all aboard the Goldberg push for Jade Cargill.
Yeah, and considering how kind of shaky her first promo was, this, she knocked it out of the park here. Like, this provided some fuel to a feud that, you know, kind of was sidelined a little bit, and I'm going to be real interested. That's going to be a really interesting match, and now I'm completely bought in on a storyline perspective.
Mox and Eddie are in their trailer. Eddie's leg is broken. He says to the Good Brothers, "This isn't New Japan or other places. You all are going to pay for this." And Mox asks, "How far are you willing to take this? Are you willing to take it as far as we are?" And he says he doesn't know or like the Young Bucks, but he guesses that he owes them one. He doesn't like owing people things. He doesn't like Bullet Club melodrama. But if they're going to play the game, they better be ready to get their hands dirty.
Yeah, another great promo on this show. So I'm not sure what you guys are talking about all the promos on this show being bad. Eddie just doing great character work from start to finish, as usual, says, "Yeah, that's what that is. That's a broken something. The something is broken." So unlike, Juice Robinson, who's like, "Yeah, that's a fucking broken metatarsal in my hand. I know exactly what bone that is that's broken." Eddie has no idea. And he also, like, gets fired up and starts to stand up on his broken leg or whatever the fuck, and then consequently loses his train of thought. So Moxley has to step in. Just tremendous stuff. And Moxley gives, you know, exactly what he should be doing as the babyface. It allows him to comment as the top babyface, allows him to comment on the promotion as a whole and the meta criticisms from the fans. And he's like, I'm tired of all the Bullet Club melodrama. And that's exactly the note he should be hitting there. So, yeah, great segment.
I will say that the reason why the promos felt like that they were down on the show, because here were the promos we had in order. We had the Dark Order Page one that was cute, the Archer program, which, I mean, we still don't know the purpose of the program. We had Britt's promo, which knocked it out of the park, the really bad Christian segment, the Pinnacle promo after their match, then Team Taz is fine, and then QT and Cody. A bad set of promos.
Find a good.
Nyla Rose versus Ty Conti, we already talked, but Ty won with the DD Ty. Afterwards, Vicky was holding Ty, so Nyla grabbed her, gave her the Beast Bomb. Sheeta made the save in the suit. Sheeta's loving this suit look now.
I think she saw how many impressions it was getting on Twitter, and she's like, oh, yeah, I'm rolling with this for a while.
This is over. Yes, it absolutely is. But the Bunny, of all people, attacked Sheeta. Very surprising. Hardy and the Butcher Blade looked on. Matt Hardy said the women's tournament was a sham because the Bunny wasn't in it. So I suppose Nyla and Vicky are now, I don't know, maybe are they aligned with the Hardy family office?
It seems like Nyla and Vicky will ally with anyone in for convenience. They kind of just seem like the heel women's people that get plugged in and everything. Was there a really long dead air after Matt Hardy's like 2 second line here on, or was that just the fight feed?
Didn't stand out to me if there was.
Okay, that must have just been the fight feed, but Matt Hardy said his little thing, and then I just kind of hung with a wide shot of the stage for like a very long amount of time, and I was like, I wonder if something else is supposed to be happening here.
Then we had a hype video for the Arcade Anarchy match with Miro and Kip and Chuck versus Orange Cassidy, which is going to happen next week.
Good hype video. Mm-hmm. Like seeing these guys, they're all genuinely funny. Is it funnier though for Orange Cassidy to call Kip Donkey Kong Jr., or should he have called them Diddy Kong?
Oh, I think Donkey Kong Jr. is the funnier thing there. Like that requires a level of relevance that goes past Donkey Kong Country. So I think Donkey Kong Jr. was the right line. I thought that this was just a pretty solid thing across the board. I've liked the path that Chuck Taylor has taken with this. And, you know, what they've done with Orange Cassidy over the last 24 hours has been very interesting to me. I don't know if I know in the past we've gotten in trouble for spoilers, but I feel like that this one is such a awesome and ancillary one that, you know, I give them credit. Like, when they want to go get some licensed music, they go and get some licensed music. So I'll leave that to that.
There was another Scorpio Sky pre-tape that looked like they just filmed it at the same time they filmed the other one. Where he said he's been screwed over and over again, and the Darby match was part of that, but his days of being underrated are over. He's going to face Mike Seidel on Elevation next week, and he debuts the hot new catchphrase, it's time to pay the rent.
Is that one of the opening lines to the Muppet Show theme song? It's time to pay the rent.
I guess he's going with a landlord gimmick. I mean, that'll get heel heat, so...
Only Among Us. I'm sorry. Among Us.
I need to go back and listen to that. No, I said it. I forgot.
There could be a real super cut of Aaron's mispronunciations, weird idioms I have, and Nate's a plant talk that I feel like would be the proper compilation disc out of us.
Was really interested to see where Mike was going to go on. What is Nate fucked up?
I mean,
that's a safe option.
Yeah, no, it's a safe option. Nate, out of the three of us, you show your ass on air the least. So
thank you. I did fuck up the name of the dairy, the Indian dairy drink that I talked about.
Oh, Lassie. Yeah, Mega Lassie.
Lassie,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I said Lassie.
Yes,
I can't think of any right now, but Nate has had some funny pronunciations in the past.
Well, the other one that I was disputing was it's pronounced Lubatins.
Pretty sure that's not true.
Yeah, that's not.
That was my point. The French pronunciation is Lubatin. I took French, okay. So I know how to say the French pronunciation. I'm saying Americans. You know how we were saying like It's Cairo, Illinois, because Cairo. They say Cairo, Illinois.
Right.
So it's Cairo, Egypt. That's what I'm saying. Americans say Louboutins because they don't know French.
I
was talking Louboutin. About at the time.
Yeah, I say Louboutin.
All right, whatever.
TNT title match.
Put it in your supercut.
Darby won with the code red. Hardy attacked Darby. Everybody brawled. We talked about that. But yeah, that was the show. If you like this show, Everything Elite, you can support us by heading over to patreon.com/everythingelite. We got 3 tiers. It's been our best month ever on the Patreon. Thanks everybody for all the support. This past week, we do, at least one bonus show weekly. And this week we had the Spears boys back for some more prospects with the Rhodes Wrestling Academy show.
Yeah, that was a whole lot of fun. There's few things that Drew and I like talking about more than the idea of people starting their career and the way that they kind of portray it. And it's a nice like side B to the Nightmare Factory produce in a lot of different ways, had a lot of charm in a way, but it was a wild kind of show, and we got a chance to talk about it. And Drew on air talked me into doing WrestleMania Indie Weekend coverage, which was something I was planning on avoiding. So there's a whole lot there.
Nice, good work, Drew.
Thank you, Drew. Of course, this week on Wednesday we had our light show where we preview Dynamite. We look back at what happened on Elevation and Dark, and Nate gives us the vlog quick hits. So we got all the content covered for you. We'll have another weekly show out next week. And if you sign up, head over to our Discord. But I guess, the biggest new thing we've been doing is on the $8 feed, you can get this show live on Wednesday nights right after Dynamite. But you can also see the YouTube feed stays up. So you have all night and whenever it goes up the next day to check it out and get a sneak peek before it hits feeds. So check it out. Coming up soon, I'm going to just keep plugging this until it happens. I'm going to have an episode with Murder Brian. So if you're a Murder Brian fan, he's finally coming back to the Everything Elite Patreon. So join us, patreon.com/everythingelite. Next week on Dynamite, we will have the exhibition match, as we discussed, Cody versus QT Marshall, Arcade Anarchy, Chuck and Orange Cassidy versus Miro and Kip Sabian, Hikaru Shida and Ty Conti versus The Bunny and Nyla Rose, Omega and the Good Brothers versus the Lucha Brothers and Laredo Kid, and Christian Cage versus Frankie Kazarian.
So Jade versus Red Velvet isn't next week.
They didn't say that, I don't believe.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well,
that would be 2 women's matches. You know how hard it is to book 2 women's matches on a weekly program.
Happen.
Yeah.
But perhaps the more interesting thing they announced, they're going to do a house show on April 9th. They didn't give us any more news on that, but presumably I won't be able to watch it, which is good because that means I won't have to do a podcast about it.
Is that right around Mania weekend? Is that when that's happening?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I guess so.
I believe Mania weekend is the second weekend in April this year. They had to move it. So it is my belief.
That makes sense. A lot of wrestlers are going to be in Florida. They maybe want to get some eyes on people, and they maybe want to start testing out formats or setups or whatever for resuming touring. So kind of computes they want to get some reps in on both those things.
And there would be all the people that are in Tampa for WrestleMania weekend wrestling wise, and you'd have an opportunity probably to run a pretty long tryout if one would want to. Just for people who are thinking that would be a fun thing to do is go to see this house show while they're in Tampa. It is a 3-hour and 13-minute drive from Tampa to Jacksonville. So does not necessarily feel like it's doing the WrestleMania weekend. We're going to be doing shows in the wake of WrestleMania. It just seems like they're doing it.
Yeah, no, I think they want to stay away. Or they certainly said last week they want to stay away from WrestleMania weekend and not, have that be associated with maybe the minor leagues in that regard. I think doing it at their own venue, considerably far away, it's not an attempt to play to that crowd, but may as well take advantage of an opportunity to see people that they might have otherwise not had a chance to see.
Yes. Some big news that we haven't discussed. La Sombra has been released from WWE. No non-compete. Certainly, I have no idea what he's doing, but certainly would love to see him in AEW, if at all possible.
Yeah, it's interesting. He probably, I mean, if he's available and wants to work in AEW, you sign him, but probably seems like that he's, I think he is going to go to Ring of Honor. Like, that makes sense, given who's all in Ring of Honor right now. But, yeah, good for Sombra getting out of there. Good for Andrade getting out.
That does make sense as far as wanting to, you know, reunite with Rush, and the Ingobernables. Doesn't make sense if you want anybody to see your work. So, you know, I would not be surprised that, you know, AEW shown a willingness to be like, hey, our door is open. We'll do little things for a quick little runs. Remember the 5-date Matt Cardona tour? So, you know, maybe he dips his toe in and then goes on to a longer run with New Japan or something. But, you know, the door would still be open in some regard. That'd be cool.
Yeah, they should just, I mean, they should just pay him so that he doesn't have to go to Ring of Honor. I don't know what, like... Yeah. Sinclair is doing, because, you know, they haven't been running, so I don't know if they're like, we're not sinking as much money into this promotion right now since we're paying fucking Sledge, or I don't even know who that is, but I saw some news note.
Slex? Are you talking about Slex?
I think the there's business? A guy called Sledge. There's a guy called Sledge.
Woods Hall of Famer Slex? Inaugural class?
No, this is Sledge, the metalhead maniac.
Okay. That sounds real. Yeah.
Forged by the demons that live inside his head, the metalhead maniac once turned to drugs and alcohol to quiet those voices. However, realizing he was hurting himself and those closest to him, Sledge returned to the sport he loved, professional wrestling.
Real, like, 1993 WWF New Generation hours right there.
Anyway, there was a news note that he never debuted with Ring of Honor, but they've been paying him throughout COVID. So
this is Sledge. I remember they renewed Slex's contract without him ever having appeared.
Yeah. Slex, I mean, and I think Adam Brooks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know, but I think it was Sledge. And this I typed in Sledge Ring of Honor and it's a real person. So I feel
first
like I'm
time,
right.
First time I've ever heard of Sledge. Whereas, of course, Slex, you know, inaugural Hall of Famer.
And the business.
Yeah. Sombra's anyway. Cool. You know, Taya Trinidad also sitting out there on the market, very talented, has an audience. You know, it does. Meltzer was like speculating, oh, they might have paid too much for Paul White and Christian to be able to sign these people. And there is certainly a glut of talent in this promotion.
Right.
It would really be too bad if, you know, adding your Cesar Barnonis and your Hot Young Brawlies and your Christians and your Paul White's prevented you from getting like two really great talents like Taya Trinidad and La Sombra.
Well, Tony has like openly talked about how much he likes Trinidad. So I feel like he would bring her in if at all possible.
I don't know. I did listen to that interview where somebody asked him about it and he kind of played it off. I don't know. Oh, okay. I wasn't sold that he was like, you know, he had like a pat answer. It was like, oh, well, you know, I don't want to talk about or too talented while they have a non-compete, blah, blah, blah. And then they're like, oh, well, it's up. And he's like, oh, okay, well, that, you know, that changes my calculations or obviously, you know, want to give that some thought. So it sounded a little more diplomatic than enthusiastic, okay. I would say.
Well, the thing is, if you're Tony Khan, if you run a wrestling promotion and La Sombra is available and you don't do everything you can to bring him in, like, you're making a bad decision.
It's the same thing, like, if Brock Lesnar is available, you pay the Brock tax. Like, it's just... You just do it. And Sombra, of course, isn't going to command that kind of salary, but Sombra has probably longer term growth than Brock Lesnar would.
Absolutely. Yeah. And like you can just like stake out the entire Mexican American viewership, you know, between the Lucha Brothers, Laredo Kid, La Sombra. You know, it's like while the WWE pushes no one. I mean, granted, AEW has not done a tremendous job of pushing the Lucha Brothers or everything. But, you know, has at least, like, treated them with respect, I guess I would say.
Also, you lock down that group of fans of guys who go to the 9/11 memorial to find Taya Trinidad's dad.
Is this a real thing that happens?
Oh, yeah.
Well, of course
dude.
It is. Of course it is. It's dudes she on did, the internet. They're did. Terrible.
She did say, like, stop making fun of the guys that do this. I think it's sweet.
But, yeah, it's, like, a very big, like... yeah, Dan Trinidad simp thing to take a picture with, like, pointing to her dad's name on the 9/11 monument or whatever.
Dudes rock.
All right, I think that's a good place.
That is one of the truer uses of dudes rock that I've heard in a while.
All right.
I like it.
Well, good. If you want to see more things you like, follow us on Twitter at @EverythingAEW. I'm at Aaron Like the Car. Nate's at Epitasis. Mike is at Fuji Heya. Subscribe to the podcast. Give us a 5-star rating and review if you use the Apple Podcast app. And please support the show by heading over to patreon.com/everythingelite. All right, for Mike, for Nate, I'm Aaron. We'll see you next week.